Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Investor Call. All lines will be in listen-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, press star then zero on your telephone. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. I'd now like to hand over to the chairperson, David Wichnow, Principal of Tetragon. Please begin your meeting, and I'll be standing by.
Thank you. Hi, this is David Wichnow, one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group Limited. I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on our Q1 2010 results and provide an update on progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to prior calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's Q1 2010 results. I will provide a quick overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics, and then Jeff Herlin, Mike Rosenberg, and I will go over questions we have received in the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments concerning performance and financial conditions on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. Let me now turn the call over to Phil.
Thanks so much, David, and welcome to the investor call. I'd like to start by providing some high-level comments on the results of the first quarter of 2010, which, as hopefully you've seen, are contained in the recently published quarterly report. I'll then make some specific comments about certain performance drivers and about the latest recalibration of some of TFG's modeling assumptions. As in the past, further detailed questions on the quarterly report and on the financials can be sent to us and will be answered directly wherever we can. 2010 started very well for TFG, with Q1 delivering the third successive quarter of positive EPS at 58 cents per share, which is our second highest quarter ever. Cash generation from the portfolio improved to $51.1 million. Consolidated net profits grew to $72.5 million in the quarter, and NAV per share grew to over $7. Those measures were the best levels TFG has seen since Q4 2008. This was in particularly stark contrast to the same period in 2009, of course, in which TFG generated a net loss of $414.3 million following a significant write-down in the fair value of the portfolio. Turning to TFG's consolidated statement of operations, there were several underlying positives in the quarter. As our CLO deals continue to recover and strengthen, the average IRRs improved from 11.9% to 12.3%, and investment income increased to $43.2 million for the quarter. Following the completion of the acquisition of LCM, that business generated $3.3 million of gross CLO management fee income in the last 2 months of the quarter, which we were delighted with. We also started to reflect their operating costs in the quarter, and that's the main driver for the increase in operating expenses, excluding management incentive fees, from less than $1 million to $3.2 million for the quarter. And you should expect to see a continuation of that going forward, both income and expense. Although investment income is clearly extremely important, as we mentioned on prior calls, when reviewing the performance of TFG's investments, it's also useful to combine the interest income line with a change in the realized or unrealized value of investments further down the statement of operations. For Q1 2010, the combined number was a gain of $97.7 million, following a gain of $133 million in Q4 2009, and a loss of $410 million in Q1 2009. The Q1 net income was boosted by an increase in the portfolio's fair value of $54.5 million, and this brings me on to the valuation of the portfolio, including the changes to certain of our modeling assumptions. We explained our valuation methodology at some length in our 2009 annual report, and it's also described in some detail on TFG's website, but I'll briefly recap some aspects of the process before commenting on Q1 2010 in particular. One of our key tasks when determining the US GAAP compliant fair value of TFG's portfolio is to derive a value at which market participants could transact in an orderly market. Absent transparent and reliable market pricing, we generally use a modeling approach which involves two main steps. Firstly, we model future cash flows for each deal in the portfolio using what we consider to be our base case assumptions. This generates our deal IRRs and base case fair value, which are used to drive the recognition of income. Secondly, we adjust the fair value through what we call an ALR fair value adjustment, which has the effect of applying a higher discount rate to those future cash flows. This is, as you'd expect, a pretty dynamic process, so we regularly evaluate our base case assumptions in the light of both actual experience in the portfolio and observable market data, either reflecting historical trends or future expectations, and we attempt to factor in their potential impact on the performance of TFG's CLO investments. Clearly, determining forward-looking assumptions is a challenging aspect of the process, and we seek to be both reasonable in terms of the inputs, consistent in terms of the valuation process, and transparent in the way we communicate that process. In early 2010, we've observed a number of developments. Firstly, a general improvement in the portfolio, which David will cover in more detail later in the call, and indeed in the market in general, which Jeff will cover later. Secondly, we observed a growing optimism among the rating agencies and analysts about the near-term outlook for defaults, with their base case forward assumptions showing continuing improvements in 2010 and 11 in particular. For example, the predicted US 12-month speculative grade default rate is highly relevant to the valuation of our portfolio. Moody's, in a report published in March, predicted that this metric will fall from 10.9% in March 2010 to 3.3% by December 2010 and 3% by February 2011. Similarly, S&P recently provided their baseline assumption for this metric as 5% for 2010, which is 1.1 times their long-term average default levels. So different absolute levels, but certainly very similar trends. Thirdly, we're observing remaining uncertainty over the sustainability of the global macroeconomic recovery and over the medium-term risk associated with what has been referred to as the refinancing cliff in 2012-14. While this latter issue may well be alleviated by the ongoing trend of amend and extend adjustments to loans, and indeed other measures, the risk that defaults may be postponed rather than totally avoided seems to be a meaningful area of perceived uncertainty across the market. So what does that mean for our assumptions? Well, based on our recent analysis, we've recalibrated TFG's default assumptions in the following manner. We scale back our assumptions for 2010 from 6.5% to 5.4%, so that's taking it from 3 times our original base case to 2.5 times. For 2011, we've reduced the assumptions from 6.5% to 4.3%, so that's moving from 3 times to 2 times our original base case. And then reflecting the heightened uncertainty I mentioned a little bit earlier, around 2012 and 14, we've increased our assumptions from 2.2% to 3.2%, or from 1 times base to 1.5 times the original base case. And then our long-term assumption of 2.2% remains in place from 2015 onwards. One investor asked us recently, how can you accurately predict defaults for the next 5 years, particularly given last year's experience? Good question, and we're very mindful of the difficulty of this task, but a few thoughts might be worth noting. Firstly, TFG's historic cash flow experience has generally borne out the reasonableness of our recalibrated assumptions, and that was even through the highly stressed period of late 2008 and the first half of 2009. Secondly, we believe it's reasonable at this stage to broadly maintain our cumulative 5-year default outlook, despite growing optimism. We don't believe it to be appropriate to base TFG's fair value on an overly optimistic set of assumptions. And thirdly, by calibrating our assumptions broadly in line with observable baseline levels, we believe that we should be in line with what other market participants would generally use, given access to the same information. I'll move on now from defaults to cover 3 other main modeling assumptions. Firstly, one that we actually haven't changed, and that's recovery rates. Despite some evidence of improving levels of recoveries in defaulted loans, we've left that assumption unchanged at 55% for 2010 and 11, and then we revert back to the long-term expectation of 71% thereafter. And we'd like to see some further sustained evidence of an improvement before moving our assumptions up. Regarding reinvestment prices, which drive the assumed amount of par that is built when loans prepay and are replaced, We've increased the base case assumption to 95% from 87% for 2010 to 2011, as we feel this better reflects, amongst other things, observable levels. Finally, we've reduced our prepayment assumption, having reduced our prepayment assumptions to 7.5% in the first quarter of 2009, we've seen an increase in that metric in late 2009 and early 2010, and we think it's now appropriate to increase it to 17.5%, which is getting close to the long-term average of 20%. The overall effect of the recalibration exercise was basically to leave the fair value of the portfolio unchanged, and at the same time to redistribute our forward-looking five-year default assumptions, giving us heightened defaults in the potentially uncertain 2012-14 period. The recently acquired investments relating to the acquisition of LCM, as well as the secondary purchase, were all valued using the same base case methodology. But of course, as you'd expect, the new loan portfolio, more of which later, is being valued using available market pricing. I'd now like to turn my comments to the ALR fair value adjustment component of the fair value process. Those of you who have been following TFG for a while will already know that the ALR is a balance sheet reserve, which was mainly established in late 2008 and early 2009 by applying a more pessimistic set of assumptions to the CLO investments. The ALR has been reallocated across investments over time, but broadly unchanged overall. The ALR has a comparable effect as if we'd taken the base case cash flows, using the assumptions I just discussed, and applied a higher discount rate to the future cash flows to reflect greater risk or uncertainty about the future. As at Q1 2010, the effective discount rate, after taking into account the ALR, was roughly 28% on a portfolio basis, which is a small drop from the level at the end of 2009. So having discussed the inputs to the process, let's have a little look at the outputs. And we think that the reasonableness of the result of our fair value process can be assessed using, amongst other things, three measures. Firstly, the average value across the portfolio, which is approximately 47 cents. Which we believe is reasonable on average basis when compared with other market players. Although, just as you'd expect, the values of the transactions are very broadly dispersed, reflecting the differing performance of the deals. Secondly, the directional move of the values. Generally, there has been improvement in the carrying values of the deals, and that makes sense in the context of ongoing improvements in underlying collateral and cash flows. And thirdly, our effective discount rate delivered through the ALR is, we believe, within a reasonable range used by market participants. We've been asked recently, also by external parties, whether we think we're being too conservative with our new assumptions, given Q1's strong performance, and as part of that, is the ALR too high? Well, hopefully, looking at the way that we assess the reasonableness of our fair value process, I've already partially answered that. But also, as I mentioned, we seek to model a reasonable fair value which is US GAAP compliant, and it's not specifically intended to be an overly optimistic one. We hope that by carefully explaining our approach, you as investors will be able to understand the basis for the valuation and reflect your own views, whether more or less optimistic, when determining the appropriate share price relative to the NAV. Moving on from valuation, a word on operating expenses, including performance fees, they were $28.6 million for the quarter, which represents approximately 61% of investment income and 28% of total income and gains. Turning now to cash flow, the cash generated by the portfolio continues to improve, reflecting the strong underlying portfolio performance, which they will provide more color on later. I should note here that if you want to analyze the operating cash flows of the business, I'd encourage you to look at the financial statements of the master fund, which holds the CLO assets, rather than only Tetragon or TFG itself. I think you need to look at both. And a couple of the questions that we've received reflect people looking at just one. Total cash receipts, as I mentioned before, were approximately $51.1 million for the quarter, or 41 cents per weighted average share. And that enabled TFG to maintain the dividend of 6 cents per share and also to maintain the share repurchase program. In contrast to the early quarters of 2009, when it looked highly likely that TFG would need to inject cash into some of its weaker deals unless it was absolutely essential to maintain a material unencumbered cash balance, in Q1 2010, TFG was able to invest selectively into various loans, and Mike's going to cover this, as well as the broader topic of cash utilisation in more detail later in the call. So in summary for my section, I'm happy to report that TFG has started 2010 very strongly, and this is maintaining the positive momentum seen in Q3 and particularly in Q4 2009. Early results from Q2 2010 have been encouraging, although we remain mindful of the potential for a continued uncertain environment, which is likely to remain through 2010 and beyond. So our outlook remains cautiously optimistic. With that, I'll pass back to David to comment on TFG's portfolio and risk profile.
Thanks, Phil. I'd like to now quickly run you through a few portfolio and performance metrics. As of the end of Q1, our CLO investment portfolio held 68 CLO investments managed by 32 different collateral managers, representing an estimated fair value of approximately $710 million. Additionally, TFG held approximately $45.7 million in direct liquid U.S. bank loan investments, representing $48.9 million in par amount. These loans were purchased in March 2010 in an effort to more efficiently utilize TFG's unencumbered cash and were selected with the support of the LCM team, which was successfully integrated onto the TFG platform during the quarter. The portfolio continues to be diversified across underlying asset classes and geographies. Approximately 74.2% of risk capital is invested in CLOs with primary exposure to U.S. broadly syndicated senior secured loans, 7.4% in CLOs with primary exposure to European broadly syndicated senior secured loans, and 18.4% in CLOs with primary exposure to U.S. middle market senior secured loans. On a look-through basis, Tetragon's exposure to senior secured leverage loans totals approximately $17.5 billion par value, spread across approximately 1,650 corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European names. We continually evaluate our hedging strategy for credit exposure and FX principal risk on an ongoing basis as we seek to address identified risks to the extent practicable and in a cost-effective manner. I'd like to now update you on some key metrics that we remain focused on. TFG's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate was approximately 4.9%. 16% below the 5.8% 12-month lagging institutional U.S. loan default rate reported by S&P. As of the end of Q1 2010, approximately 94% of our CLO investments were passing their most junior OC tests when evaluated on a percentage of fair value basis, an increase from approximately 85% at the end of Q4 2009. When measured on a percentage of transaction basis, 51, or approximately 80% of the company's CLO investments by number of transactions, were passing their most junior OC tests, an increase from approximately 68% at the end of Q4 2009. This compares favorably with the market-wide average, as approximately 78% of U.S. CLOs were estimated to be passing their junior OC tests as at the end of Q1 2010, according to Morgan Stanley's April 1st CDO tracker report. At the end of Q1 2010, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated triple C or below fell to 11.1%, comparing favorably to the market median of 13.5%, as reported by Morgan Stanley. Now we'd like to turn to some of the questions that we have received from investors in advance of the call. Before doing so, we'd like to reiterate that we value communication with the company's shareholders and strive to make ourselves available to answer questions to the extent that we're able outside of the quarterly calls. We ask that interested individuals submit questions that we could potentially cover on this update call. Based on our review, it appears that four investors and one analyst submitted questions for this call. Given that the questions have come from few persons and a number of the questions overlapped, we will paraphrase or combine them for the purposes of this call as we seek to provide information that will be of interest to all call participants and shareholders. To the extent that questions relate to information discussed on previous quarterly calls or contained in our public disclosures that remain current, we generally do not propose to reiterate that information on this call. Where appropriate, we may also discuss specific questions directly with relevant investors, although we note that we are not able to necessarily address every matter raised. Turning to the questions now. There are a few questions relating to dividends and the company's capital distribution program. We remain mindful of the company's investment objective of generating distributable income and capital appreciation. The company's capital distribution program is available on the company's website. We believe the current program better describes the company's views on all capital distributions, including dividends, than the former dividend policy, which had a very narrow focus that may not have been meaningful for a particular quarter. The capital distribution program has a broad focus of returning value to shareholders, including through dividends and other means, and sets out certain relevant considerations, including, one, the expected sustainability of the company's cash generation capacity in the short and medium term, two, the current and anticipated performance of the company, three, the current and anticipated operating and economic environment, and four, other potential uses of cash, ranging from preservation of the company's investments and financial positions to other investment opportunities. Such considerations inform the investment manager's recommendation of a dividend for Q1 2010 of 6 cents. We, of course, understand that shareholders may desire an appropriate yield component from their TFG holdings. We believe our current yield compares favorably with financial firms in the loan market and certainly the three-month LIBOR, which is now approximately 36 basis points. With that as background, it's important to emphasize again that the company continues to seek to return value to its shareholders, including through dividends and share repurchases, as well as explore other methods of returning capital to shareholders. With that, let me turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Dave. We were also asked what level of cash generation we anticipate for 2010. While we don't provide forward-looking cash flow estimates, we did generate $51.1 million in gross cash during Q1 2010, which is a 33% increase from Q4 2009's gross cash receipts, which were $38.4 million. The number of deals passing their OC test is a significant driver of portfolio cash generation in any given quarter, and is measured on a percentage of transactions basis. This increased to about 80% of the company's CLOs, which was up from 68% at the end of Q4. If TFG's CLO investments continue to perform, one would expect our cash flows to grow accordingly. On a related point, we received a question on the company's use of cash and cash balances. As noted, our cash reserves grew to $172.6 million as of March 31st, 2010, of which approximately $63.7 million was earmarked to settle certain bank loan investment purchases and pay certain short-term liabilities. As described earlier, in March 2010, we purchased approximately $48.9 million in par amount of liquid U.S. bank loans. We will continue to evaluate a variety of uses of deploying our cash. First, we expect to continue to explore other potential acquisitions to grow our asset management platform, both within and beyond the CLO and loan market, as well as across new assets and asset classes and strategies. We continue to examine various acquisitions that may broaden the company's revenue-producing asset base. Second, we expect to continue to evaluate certain secondary CLO investment opportunities, and Jeff's going to go into this in more detail later on in the call. And then third, the company may be able to capitalize on new issue CLO prospects during 2010 in order to grow LCM's business and add to its existing CLO investment portfolio. In addition, we'll continue to review opportunities to support TFG's existing CLO investments if necessary. Finally, and importantly, as discussed earlier, we we intend to continue to serve our aim of returning capital to shareholders. Those are the company's main potential uses of cash going forward for 2010. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Jeff, who will talk about a few questions received on the CLO market.
Thanks, Mike. As mentioned, we received a few questions on our views on the CLO market, and in particular, the new issue market. Questions included what we think of the new issue CLOs compared to trading prices in the secondary market and whether we've been approached to originate new CLOs. As described in the quarterly report, U.S. CLOs have shown continued improvement during Q1, with European CLOs showing the early stages of potential recovery. The new issue CLO market has also shown some signs of improvement. The secondary CLO market has continued to rally, and while there are still maybe opportunities for TFG, especially at the equity level, they are not as obvious as in the prior year. From just a pricing perspective, it's not easy to compare the secondary market versus the new issue market for several reasons. While the new issue market has gotten a lot of press recently, it is still a very nascent market with only two significant deals pricing and a third just about to price. There are also significant differences in both structure and underlying loan portfolios between the secondary and new issue market that make comparing the two on just a pricing basis very difficult. The new issue deals have had a shorter legal maturity, a shorter reinvestment period, and most importantly, are much less levered at approximately 5 to 6 times leverage versus 12 to 13 times leverage in older vintage deals. From a loan portfolio perspective, the attractiveness of the new issue deals is potentially the lack of or the ability to mitigate tail risk in the portfolio. Specifically, the new issue deals have much lower, if any, second lien loans, and the portfolio is much more seasoned than when the deal was first originated. Logically, this should lead to a lower default experience versus certainly the most recent market performance of the last few years and even on a historical basis. This is counterbalanced against the lower leverage in the structure. We have been approached by several investment banks regarding a new issue CLO that would be managed by LCM. We're evaluating these opportunities in terms of growing LCM, but also in the context of the best use of the company's capital as described above. As mentioned previously, any new issue deal would have less leverage than TFG's existing CLO portfolio and correspondingly a larger equity tranche than past vintages. Accordingly, obtaining significant or majority positions in such equity tranches may require greater capital than which we have previously required. All else being equal, lower leverage would logically result in lower absolute returns, but also have a lower risk profile. Other factors to consider are the growth of LCM and other opportunities TFG could pursue. It's safe to say that we desire to grow LCM. Whether that ends up being in the near term or later as AAA spreads come in is something that we are currently working on in the context of other priorities. The LCM team's experience and track record in the senior secured bank loan space for Tetragon with a number of opportunities to take advantage of their skill set in addition to new issue CLOs, including potentially assisting in the purchase of secondary CLO equity. Another way is LCM's involvement in the approximately $50 million unlevered bank loan portfolio that we mentioned earlier. We believe this portfolio is designed to capture the upside price potential through targeting credits that may incur structural changes over the next 6 to 12 months. We believe this strategy, implemented in the first quarter of this year, is yielding solid results. Depending on relevant considerations, it is possible that such purchase loans could begin to form the basis of a new issue CLO. We hope to leverage LCM's historical track record by growing assets under management and hence fee income through potential opportunities in the third-party capital raising, potentially including the new issue CLO market described earlier, the closed-end fund arena, and the separate account funds management space. That brings us to an end of the Q&A portion of the call, and we hope that you have found it helpful. With that, I'll return it back to David.
Thanks, Jeff. Again, we'd like to thank everyone for joining this call and taking the time. As always, please do not hesitate to contact us directly with any questions. We look forward to speaking with you in the future. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation today. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines.